This is WEON, and you're listening to Gravitas Podcast, making sense of the news.
Now, every war is defined by legendary battles, by fearless assaults, by steely resistance. History tends to romanticize these battles. We hear about sacrifices, about bravery. But what about the losses? Let me show you the real pictures of war, the pictures you should see. What you're looking at is the city of Mariupol in Ukraine, or at least what's left of it. Entire buildings have been wiped out by missiles. Parks and hospitals have been hit. Mariupol does not look like a 21st century metropolis. It looks like a graveyard. Unless, of course, you ask the Russians. They say Mariupol has been liberated from neo-Nazis. It's a strange way to liberate people. 21,000 civilians died in the siege of Mariupol. Thousands more were displaced, yet the city refused to give up. The siege finally ended on Tuesday after nearly 90 days. That's 90 days of relentless attacks. This steel plant was the last holdout. The Azovstal steel plant. It was defended by a mixed group. Some Ukrainian forces and some Azov fighters. Now, the Azov fighters, as we've told you before, are neo-Nazis. Their insignia, their slogans, everything indicates a far-right ideology. But since the war in 2014, Ukraine has embraced them. Russia says almost 1,000 soldiers were holed up at the plant, and these pictures show their surrender. The wounded were carried out on stretchers. The rest were packed into buses. What will happen to these soldiers now? The plan is to transport them to a former penal colony in Donetsk. Putin says all soldiers will be treated fairly, but some lawmakers in Russia are baying for blood.
They do not deserve to live after those monstrous crimes against humanity that they committed and which are being committed continuously against our prisoners of war, which we receive with our fingers cut off, and so on.
Normally, these soldiers would be placed in detention or maybe exchanged for Russian prisoners of war. But right now, their future is uncertain. It depends on what Putin wants to do, escalate or strike a deal. The fall of Mariupol is exactly what he wanted. And I can think of two reasons why. Number one, a rare victory after a string of setbacks. And number two, Mariupol could be a launching pad for his Donbass campaign. For European countries, this is alarming. Because they've seen what Russia is capable of, the airstrikes, the siege, all of it. And their priority is to protect themselves, to make sure that they are not next. How do you think they're doing that? By joining NATO. Finland and Sweden have formally submitted their application. It happened today. And NATO Chief Stoltenberg was all smiles at the event. He promised a quote-unquote rapid conclusion to NATO's Nordic expansion.
The applications you have made today are an historic step. Allies will now consider the next steps on their path to NATO. The security interests of all allies have to be taken into account. And we are determined to work through all issues and reach rapid conclusions.
So the West can't wait, sort of like a schoolboy waiting for his new toy. But one NATO ally is not playing ball. That's Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Without him, NATO cannot expand because all three allies must sign on new members. So can Erdogan spoil NATO's party? Well, briefly, yes, he can. But chances are Erdogan is looking for concessions himself, maybe to repeal sanctions or more Western military assistance. And if he gets that, the Turkish president will relent. So that's effect number one of Russia's war. More European states are joining NATO. They're seeking a common security umbrella. Effect number two is this. A stronger and more confident Europe is emerging, not out of choice, but necessity. If Europe splinters, each state will become vulnerable. Case in point, Ukraine. But together they can tackle belligerence, not just in their neighborhood, but also on the high seas. I'm talking about China. The European Union is planning to increase their presence in the Indo-Pacific. Their envoy is using some sharp words. I have a quote with me. Our motto is always to cooperate whenever possible, but to defend whenever necessary as well. It's a way of enhancing our capacity and our credibility in terms of defending our interests. What does that mean? Europe is making a sharp Pacific pivot. And that could mean anything. More voyages by European warships, more defense deals with Indo-Pacific nations. The EU envoy did not go into the details. But it's a good start by Brussels. The problem is they're not 100% committed. Guess what the same envoy said about China? It is a partner and a rival and a competitor. How does that even work? Partner, rival, competitor. I know politics makes strange bedfellows, but Europe needs to pick a side here. If Russia's expansionism is bad, so is China's. As for the Indo-Pacific countries, they must be more careful because Europe is not exactly the best ally. Just think about it. Russia is waging a war on their continent, in Europe. Yet they're buying gas from Russia. So if war does break out in the Indo-Pacific, thousands of miles away from Europe, what can we really expect from them? So the words are impressive, but we'll have to see it to believe it.